From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Behind the bolts and locks at Jessup Correctional Institution, some prisoners are making a bid for college. An experimental program by the U.S. Department of Education pays their tuition. Andrea Contora, director of the Second Chance Program at the University of Baltimore, describes how college courses work inside the walls. And Marcus Lilly, a participant who has returned home, talks about his goals and the pressure to make the most of this opportunity.
Till this day, I know I'm not the only one out here. I continue to strive to be the best person that I am and do good in school for myself, of course, but for them as well, because I know I got to pave the way for them when they come out of here, and I want to be that example.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. The U.S. prisoner population sits at a nine-year low, just under 1.5 million people, according to the U.S. Department of Justice. As these individuals return home, they can find themselves locked out of the workforce. The nonprofit Prison Policy Initiative finds that almost one-third of formerly incarcerated people are unemployed. That raises the risk they'll return to prison. The Justice Department estimates that nearly 7 of 10 people released from state prison are rearrested within 3 years. A study by the RAND Corporation, a research institute, found that education available in prisons can put a significant dent in the recidivism rate. Prisoners were 28% less likely to reoffend when compared with inmates who did not participate in such programs. One such program is offered at Maryland's Jessup Correctional Institution. The Second Chance College program there is an initiative at the University of Baltimore and part of a national experiment by the U.S. Department of Education. Andrea Contora, who directs the Second Chance College program, is Associate Professor of Criminal Justice at UB, and she's here with me. Andrea, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
What are the requirements to participate in the Second Chance College program?
So the national experiment has some exclusions of who can participate in the different experimental site programs across the country. People have to be close to release. So within 5 years of a parole or release date is one of the requirements. But for our students, we require them to apply to the university. So they have to meet the university's admission requirements. They have to have a GED or high school diploma. If they're newly out of high school, they need their SAT scores, which doesn't really apply to most of our students. Most of our students average age 35, so they have been out of high school for quite some time. But they also have to submit a resume, personal statement, letters of recommendation, transcripts from high school and or college.
You mentioned they need to be close to release within 5 years. Why?
So the Department of Education really wants to target people who are getting ready to leave. The idea is this is a reentry program, so the closer someone is to release, the more likely they will have opportunities to be successful in the community, continue their education on the outside, or get into the workforce.
So the idea is basically they start college inside and finish outside?
That's the hope of our program. Other programs across the country might have different requirements. For example, a college that's offering a certificate where a student needs 18 credits, they will likely complete that on the inside. For bachelor degree programs, it could take somebody 6 or 7 years to do such a program. So for us, most of our students will be coming out to campus to finish up.
At Jessup, how many men are currently enrolled?
So this semester, we have 43 students. We have served in the past 3 years, a total of 63 students.
That's since Second Chance started?
Yeah, since we started in August 2016, we've served 63 people.
Do you happen to know how big the population of Jessup is?
Yeah, so there's about 1,800 people at the prison. Since we've started in 2016, we've had over 200 people apply to our program, and we've been able to serve 63 of the population that's applied to us.
And what courses are offered? What degrees can participants work toward?
Sure. So we are offering everything that the University of Baltimore offers to freshmen and sophomore students: math, writing, biology, history classes, psychology, and all of this applies towards a degree in human service administration.
And the tuition for these courses, which are UB courses, as you said, covered by federal scholarships, basically?
Right. So the federal Pell Grant. So a Pell Grant is a grant from the federal government that any low-income student out in the community who qualifies can get a Pell Grant. They might get a full Pell Grant, which could be up to $6,000 a year, but it depends on their income. So they might not get that full amount. In 1994, people incarcerated in state and federal prisons could no longer receive a Pell Grant if they're incarcerated. So the experimental site initiative that we're under the Department of Education, allows us and other institutions around the country to provide Pell Grants to incarcerated people. So not everybody in prison has this access.
It's because of this particular program that is an experiment.
Yes.
That's Andrea Cantora, Associate Professor of Criminal Justice at the University of Baltimore, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. She directs the Second Chance College Program offered at Jessup Correctional Institution. It's part of a national experiment under the U.S. Department of Education. The classroom is inside a prison. Talk about the challenges that generates for teachers and students.
We try to replicate exactly what happens on our campus at the University of Baltimore. There's some challenges to doing that, but a few things that we're able to do is we bring in the same exact instructors, the same courses. I tell our instructors to teach it exactly how you would on campus. The only challenges that they face is the lack of technology. So our students can't go on the internet, do research, and produce a paper that's research heavy based on outside sources, although we've come up with creative ways to try to bring material in to help them do that. They just can't do it the way a student out in the community does.
The 43 students currently enrolled are taking how many different courses?
Each semester they take 2 to 3 courses.
How has the program adapted to the prison environment?
You know, our students coming into the program were a bit reluctant about being college students. They didn't really know what was expected of them. So our students had a lot of adjusting to college life, adjusting to, this intense schedule. You know, our students have jobs in the prison, so they have to work. They get up really early, some 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, go to work, have lunch around noontime, and then they come into our program at 3 p.m. to 8:30 every day, Monday through Friday.
So they're taking every day.
Every day, because we offer courses, plus we offer opportunities for study hall where they have access to laptops. So it's a lot that an individual incarcerated has to fit into their day.
How have you seen students change?
I've had the opportunity to watch our initial group over 3 years go through our program, and some of them are still there. And just to watch that change, you know, I've seen very shy, quiet students, not confident, become leaders in our program, ones who want to stand up and give a speech at events that we provide every year where we bring in outside people. So I've seen this sense of pride emerge from our students that they didn't really have before they stepped foot into our program.
Once someone is released, what support does the program offer?
We are really fortunate to have a reentry coordinator who we hired about 2 years ago, who goes into the prison with us. And she sits and works with guys who are coming up for parole or release and helps them map out their plan. Where are they going to live? What kind of job do they want? Do they need any treatment services? And can we connect them to services that they might be in need of? So we have that support embedded in the program. And then once our students come home, I'm there, she's there, and other staff are on campus. And it's been exciting because the first week a student is home, they call us, which has really been exciting for us. We always wondered, how is this going to work? Are people going to reach out to us and connect with us when they get out? But it's been happening as soon as they come home.
Are participants always able to keep up with the program once they have the additional challenges of
commuting and working and all the other things they have to adjust to when they're released.
So not always. We've had about 10 students come home, and I'd like to say that they're all doing well and working. We're connected with them. We see work as a success, right? So mm-hmm. some of our guys, like I mentioned, are 35, 38, and they've missed a decade of their life or more. So education while they're inside is top priority. But when they come out, it might be their fifth priority, because getting a job and supporting family and connecting with their children, of course, is the number one thing that they want to do. And they're doing that. And they check in with us and they say they're going to come back perhaps next year. We had three students come out in April. And, you know, they're all planning and talking to us about the fall and coming to campus.
The Second Chance College program is entering its fourth year this fall. We've talked about it being an experiment of the U.S. Department of Education. How long will the Pell Grants be available?
Right. So under the Experimental Site Initiative, it's meant to be a 3 to 5 year experiment, although we're told there is no specific end date. And some experimental site initiatives under the Department of Ed have gone longer than their specific time limit. But we're hoping that through the REAL Act, the Restoring Education and Learning Act that's currently being considered in Congress, we're hoping that will allow us to sustain our program much longer. And that will allow anyone who's incarcerated in a state and federal prison attend college through a Pell Grant. So it would lift the ban nationally.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Andrea Cantora is an associate professor of criminal justice at the University of Baltimore and director of the Second Chance College program at Jessup Correctional Institution. Short break here on The Record. I'm Sheila Castro. We're back. A participant in the Second Chance program tells us how it helped him forget he was not free. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Quote, even though I was locked up, taking college classes helped me forget that I wasn't free. I could forget about the guards that picked on us when they were agitated. I could forget about having to go back to my cell for a lock-in. Class was a safe space, and I was a college student. End quote. That's part of a piece published last year by the Marshall Project, a nonprofit news organization covering the U.S. criminal justice system, and the online news outlet Vice. The piece was written by Marcus Lilly, who is pursuing a Human Services Administration degree at the University of Baltimore. He's a participant in the Second Chance College program, which offers federal subsidies to pay for college courses to qualified individuals in prison. Lilly was released from the Jessup Correctional Institution in 2017 and is here with us. Marcus, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You were in and out of correctional facilities since your early teens on multiple charges, including attempted murder. How would you describe your educational experiences before this program?
Well, I failed the third grade, and I failed the fifth grade. I never had a comprehension problem. I always had a behavior problem. So
a
behavioral problem.
Behavioral problem.
Yeah,
bad.
I was a bad kid in class, so I always got in trouble. But I was never really enthusiastic about education. My family, although everybody promotes education in some degree, it wasn't a big theme in my family, like education, or in my community. So I never really had a need or in my mind at that time for education. I was more focused on the streets because that was, I grew up looking up to the wrong people. I never really seen too many educators or lawyers or doctors, and I know this is kind of like an old story, but it's my story as well. Like, I never seen that much. I never had that male figure or that father figure to kind of guide me in that direction.
You ended up in prison in 2004?
Yes.
So years later, you hear about the Second Chance College program. What was your reaction?
At that time, I was already on a path of my own. When I first got incarcerated, I was still getting in trouble. I still had the same mindset. And I guess 7.5 years or 8 years into it, I was on solitary confinement, and I had the opportunity to no novels, no romantic, exotic-type novels, all history books, politics, and it just opened me up. It broadened my horizons. And what I learned about me was I didn't have to fit into the mold that I believed I had to fit into, and I felt like society tried to force me into, such as labels like being a gangster, or the only thing you can do is sell drugs, or you gotta always react with aggression. Like, those were kind of like philosophies in my mind that I believed unconsciously. So education opened me up to not only personal growth, but, you know, like, as far as values, being able to react differently, being able to express myself, and just intelligently being able to hold a conversation in a room with a bunch of professors or a bunch of college students. So once I realized and seen that within myself, I seeked out educational opportunities.
And so when you heard about Second Chance, it
I was very excited. And I filled out the application. I was actually privileged to be on a, it was kind of like an advisory board. It was a few incarcerated citizens that was kind of like leaders in a prison at that time, and was promoted education heavily, facilitators or mentors, and we kind of like helped, I guess, shape and mold kind of like some of the logistics of the program. So I was going through that process, and I filled out the application, and you know, the rest is history. I actually got accepted on my birthday, so it was a good birthday present.
That sounds like a good birthday present. But so you're in this select program. I mean, a lot of people don't end up getting accepted. Did you feel a lot of pressure?
Yes. It's like a survivor's guilt.
Survivor's guilt.
Yeah, it's a weird way of putting it, but I actually, the program that helped me get into the Second Chance College program, it was a non-accredited college program. You had to be in that program in order to get into the Second Chance program.
Oh.
And shortly after the Second Chance College program came up and running, they shut that program down. That kind of gave me that sense of survivor's guilt, because I know it's a lot of incarcerated citizens that was in that prison specifically, and I know in general, that asked me about getting into the program. Can you get me into the program? I had at least 20 different people ask me to get into the program, and I tried to help certain people get into the program, but it was stipulations. And so I do feel like more access to the program was something that kind of bothered me, because I would have liked to see more incarcerated citizens gain that education and gain that self-growth, that self-esteem.
Is there a special bond among the guys who were in the program?
Absolutely. We studied together. We ate together. We started off as individuals, and slowly but surely, as we got to know each other and had intellectual discussions or debates in the class, and you really get to see you're not that different from the person that's sitting next to you. Not only that, you can learn something from. So we had that element, and once we was able to get into our own building or our own tier, and all of us was on the same tier, it just grew from there. Every time we had an exam coming, we would all go in the day room. We would actually cut a trash bag, a clear trash bag, cut one side of it, and we would tape it on the wall, and we would use markers. It would be our makeshift
like
chalkboard.
Like a whiteboard, yeah.
And we would do math problems in the middle of the day room. We would do Jeopardy games where we would break up the topics of the exam, and we would all sit in the day room and have a bunch of cookies and debbies for whatever team won the prize. So we did a lot of creative stuff like that inside that helped our bond. And I still, till this day, I know I'm not the only one out here. I continue to strive to be the best person that I am and to do good in school for myself, of course, but for them as well, because I know I got to pave the way for them when they come out of here, and I want to be that example. I want to, when they get out, I want to still be a brother and still have resources, support.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with Marcus Lilly, a participant in the University of Baltimore's Second Chance College Program, an experimental initiative by the U.S. Department of Education to offer subsidized post-secondary education to people in prison. Lilly is working toward a degree in Human Services Administration. So Second Chance has to comply with a lot of restrictions because it is inside a prison. Did those interfere with your ability to learn?
On one hand, it did, and on one hand, it didn't. Small things like you had some guards that were supportive, that wanted to see us get an education and wanted to see us get out. So you do have those guards there, but as in any organization, you have bad elements, and some guards just didn't like us, thought we was better than everybody else because we wanted to get education. So stuff like that, other than that, to me, I think I feel like they could be more supportive. Like, I feel like it should be more promotion of the program. I feel
it
like
promoted inside the prison.
Yeah, just examples of us in the day room. Like, if people could just see these criminals, these thugs, or these hoodlums or whatever label we put on ourselves and other people put on us. If you could see this, just glimpse it, of us studying, working together, resolving conflict, it would change a lot of people's perspective of incarcerated citizens inside in the program. The program is beneficial, it helps. I've seen it myself. I've seen brothers that you would never think would pick up a entrepreneurship book. Look at the book, and he got everything highlighted. He enthusiastic about it. He's asking me about his business plan. He's on the phone calling his mother, trying to get resources to help with our exams because we really didn't have any internet access. So we had to go through family members to look up stuff on the internet for us sometimes. Just seeing that shift in individuals that you would look at as an incorrigible person did it for me. Like, I know the program works, and my growth alone, I wouldn't be sitting right here having this interview if it wasn't for this program.
Has it been difficult to continue your education as you adjusted to life outside?
Yes, very difficult. Trying to balance family, conflict, my search for a job when I first came home, just feeling like a fish out of water.
Why?
I feel like prison can traumatize you in little subtle ways that you may not be aware of until you get out. Like, I'm very shy. I'm very antisocial, but I wasn't always. I was a very social, you know, outgoing kid. And a part of that had to do with, growing up in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
But prison, being on solitary confinement for a total amount of my whole incarceration for like 600 and something days, it just dehumanizes you. Sometimes it makes you feel like you're not worthy to be in a conversation with people or around people. You just want to be by yourself. You isolate yourself to a corner. It's weird. You know, it's very dehumanizing. So there's a lot of different challenges that may arise that I don't know of now, because I really don't know all the effects of being inside for that long. 13 years, that's a long time.
What are you working on now?
At this moment, I work at Concerted Care Group.
What
is
that?
It's a behavioral health program that deals with substance abuse treatment, mental health services. So I'm an outreach worker. My job is to educate the community about the services of the program and try to get more potential clients to join the program.
And what's next?
Right now, I'm trying to get a part-time job because it's hard. You know, I feel like in society now, kind of need at least two jobs to get over that hump. And I've been behind the wall for 13 years, so I have a lot of catching up to do. right now is just working, school, family, and about to start my business plan from my program that I want to start.
What's the business you want to start?
It will be a program that has mentorship groups, you facilitate workshops, mm-hmm. as well as an element of community orientation. So basically, target at-risk youth who may have the thought of running in the streets or running around in the streets like I did when I was younger. So I want to try to stop that or prevent that or maybe shift their thinking.
Marcus, I wish you all the luck in the world. Good luck.
Thank you.
Marcus Lilly is a student at the University of Baltimore and a participant in the Second Chance College program. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have links to more information about the program as well as to Lilly's essay for the Marshall Project. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're with us on the record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.